Okay, today is April 27th, and we're learning theodicy in the Bible. We'll shorten class today. All right, so we're in chapter 6 of Amos, Perek Vav, and just reading a few psukim, Perek Pasuk Ches Tesen Yud. Is there a time when we should quiet down and don't say something about it? It's not the time to talk about philosophy, it's the time to talk about God. So Amos speaks of the ravages of the famine and of the plague and the sickness and everything else that's raging throughout the northern kingdom. And he says that people would bring carts to the front of every door, right? They would bring carts and just call out to the people, send out the bones. This is Pasuk, now Pasuk Tes. Right, there's 10 people originally in the house, and they're one by one they're dying. There's so much a disease, and there's so much hunger. Right? Okay, then Pasuk Yud refers to someone called Misorfo, which some of the Mefarshim say the burner. Every house had to have a burner. Someone who burns the bodies because they're so diseased, to just at least give the bones out to burn, to bury, I'm sorry. Right? Don't be amazed, the Radak says that this is what they did with Shaul's bones. Remember, the bodies were hanging on the town square of Beit Shan by the Philistines. They must have decomposed. The body decomposes very quickly. Right? So, You couldn't put whatever was left. It's called rekev. You couldn't put whatever was left of Shaul and his sons in a sack. You couldn't. They had to burn whatever was left, and they took the bones to bury and give out Shaul. That's actually what's written in Shmuel Aleph, the very end of Shmuel Aleph. The people who did this were the people of Yavesh Gilad. What's written in Divrei Hayamim, interestingly, is that they made a burning for them. In Shmuel, it says, Vayishrafu osam, they burnt them. In Divrei Hayamim, it says they burnt, that what you used to do for a king, you'd burn his special effects, you'd burn his saddle.
In Shmuel itself, too, like explanations of how
he died. Yes, but that's not relevant to this, because whether the Amaleki in Shmuel Bet was telling the truth or not, David seems to say that he's not telling the truth, he's just bragging about doing this. But but then the Plishtim found him after that. Right? Okay, so or at least they caught up to his body after that. Right? It all hinges upon what it means when it says Vayimtzu Hamorim, the archers found him. Does it mean they found his hiding place, or a stray arrow actually came in and hit him? Because if Vayimtzu Hamorim, it's inconceivable that boy had enough time to do everything he said he did and take his, you know, and actually finish him off. Right? It says in Shmuel Aleph that he fell on his sword, and the boy says, I saw him bleeding from his spear. Okay, call a sword a spear, maybe, I don't know. Anyway, it seems that David thought the boy was lying, because in Perek Dalet, when Rechav and Bana presented David with Ishbosheth's head, right? So David said, I killed the guy back there when he just informed me, right? How much more so will I kill you when you actually committed murder? But wait a second, the boy didn't just inform him. The boy said, I killed him, right? It could still be a kal v'chomer, even if he killed him. But he should have said, I killed that Amaleki when he said he killed me by request. You, Ishbosheth, didn't ask you to kill him. How much more so will I kill you? But David's words seem to imply that he thought that the boy was not telling the truth, that he was bragging. Look, I'm an Amaleki, the son of an Amaleki convert. And the irony, of course, is that Shaul was charged with killing all my family members, you know, back then. Anyway, but that's a big tangent here. What we're talking about here is that they would burn the bones, not unlike the way Radak says what happened with the people of Yavesh Gevelot and Shaul at the end of Shmuel Aleph, the very end of Shmuel Aleph. All right? So that's called the Misorfo, Lohotzi Atzomim. Usually bones are pluralized in feminine. To bring out, at least to bring out the bones. Right? Throw out the bones. The pictures are from the ghettos. Forget about from the death camps. But even from the ghettos, you know, every day was they would walk around with carts, throwing babies inside that just died in the street with no one to look after them. Right? Children were just dying in the streets. You had to pick them up and bury them. You know? At least at that point, they were allowed to bury them. Later on, they were just burnt. Right? So this is what Amos is talking about. And then it says afterwards, V'omar la'asher b'yarkasei habayis ha'odimach. And when they would say to inside the house, because the people on the outside didn't want to enter such a diseased house, they would call out at the threshold, anybody else in there? Meaning, you have any more bones to bury? V'omar, office. And they would say, no. Whoever's here is still alive. V'omar has, ki lo lahazkir b'shem Hashem. And he said, quiet, silence. It's not the time to mention God. Mapitom, what is this? Any thoughts? What do you mean? So that's the question here. When is it not proper to refer to God?
Remove these bones
because I want to bury them. I couldn't send out the bodies because no one would take them. They're so diseased, right? I think back to Shoah. Not necessarily diseased. It's just that they were so decomposed. Right, a few days in the hot sun, and the body is going to start to. Yeah, by that time, yeah. Okay. So what does he mean, has? A terminology that almost gets a lot of use of, by the way. He uses the word quite a few times. Not a common word in the Bible. Has means hush, right? Torah mentions the word haskes, which seems to mean the same kind of thing. Haskes, or shema Yisrael. Hush, listen. But here it's shortened to has, right? Later on, when he describes some terrible things that are going to happen to the northern kings and their families, at the end of this long diatribe against them, he says again, "Hus, silence, keep this quiet." Right? Malbim says, I have to share it with you, it's not really on the theodicy, but Malbim says something amazing there. He says that Amos is now calling for the end of the northern kingdom. You're too wicked, God is not going to suffer your wickedness much longer. You've been very successful relatively recently. The borders of Israel were very wide and broad, only a few generations before. But now the Assyrians are coming. God is not going to allow your success to continue with such immorality. That's a bigger chil Hashem than the Assyrians saying, our God conquered the God of Israel. That our God can live with. But he can't live with your great success with such immorality. Because then it looks like that's what I want, that I'm happy with it. Right? So, when Amos says this, the high priest of the king of Israel, his name is Amatzia, he's mentioned in Amos, so shortly after this pasuk, Amatzia tells him, stop speaking this way about the northern kingdom, it's a mikdash melech, it's an ir melucha, it was luchadogi takes for me, some of these descriptions, right? This is a great place, and it has a great future, and don't speak about it, it's fall. Right? So he says, go back to Yehuda where you came from and speak and give prophecy there. Right? So Amos says, Lo Navi Anochi Velo Ben Navi Anochi. I'm not giving prophecy because I like to. I give prophecy because the words come into my head and I have to warn you of what I see happening if you don't change your ways. Hashem Diber Mi Lo Inove. God has spoken. How can I not speak? The last word of the words of the Haftorah of Parshas Vayeshev. God has spoken. I have to speak. I have to speak up. I can't help myself. I'd rather not. I don't want to say these things. I don't like them either. Not as much, not any more than you do. But I have to warn you, right? So then he goes and says, "This is what's going to happen." And he gives a long diatribe that goes into Perikot Ches about what is the bad things that are going to happen. And at the end, he says, "Hus." Now, I think that has is not similar to this has. That Haas is trying to say either a hint that I was saying that I know this is going to get me killed if the word gets out that I said this about the king. Right? So, hush. This is what the Malbim says. That Yeshayahu, who is speaking about the northern kingdom for the safety of Yehuda, says in the beginning of his book that 65 years from now, the northern kingdom will be no longer. Now, what he means by from now is from a certain vantage point. You can't know when 65 years are over until you know when 65 years start. Right? So the Malbim says that that's why he said the word Haas. Haas is Gematria 65. This is a real, real... I mean, does the Tanakh speak with Gematria like this? This proof he brings that in the time of the Tanakh, the prophets knew that the words, the letters of Hebrew, the Hebrew letters had numerical value as well as linguistic value. Right? But he says makes it better. The whole prophecy of what he says is going to happen to the northern kingdom until the word Haas has 65 words in it. Crazy. Ramesh, it fits exactly. Not 64, 66. 65. You could be one off. 65 word prophecy ending with the word Haas. While Yeshayahu, the contemporary, said a prophecy of 65 years to the end of the northern tribes. That's the kicker. Big deal. 65, 65. No, but Yeshayahu gave that number from the safety of Yehuda. Amos was in danger. He's talking up there. And he came from Yehuda. Tekoa's in Yehuda. He was just moved by the spirit of trying to fix things up north with the prophecies that he had been seeing. And he made a difference, tried to make a difference at least. Okay, but here I think that the Haas here means something else that does relate to a class in theodicy. And I relate it as follows. I came to my shul in 1988, and there was a couple in the shul that was already in their high 80s. They were married in 1935, I think, or maybe 36. Their name was Shimon and Erna Meyer. They both lived past 100, and he was taken to Dachau after they were already married. And they lived to about, they were married maybe 70 years. So he told me about his experiences in Dachau. Dachau is where is the first concentration camp where the Nazis took in the 30s, early mid 30s, where they took Jews to like re-educate them or punish them. So they were killing some people there too. Right? You never heard the name Dachau? D-A-C-H-A-U. Doesn't ring a bell? All right. So he was telling me that the Jews, I mean, it's really this miserable thing, is that the Germans pitted Jews against each other. Right? At first, it was only a bit about the, you know, the kaiki Jews, the Jews who came from Poland recently and don't want to work and don't carry their own. They don't speak the language and they're not fitting in and they're not assimilating and they're not dressing like we are, right? Then it turned that they turned on the assimilated Jews with the laws that you can't intermarry. The Orthodox Jews didn't need laws like that. Right? You can't mix the blood, you can't mix the race, you can't, right? They didn't want them mixing. So the Jews were turned on each other. But this is what he described to me. He didn't connect it to this pasuk. No, I am. He said that the Reform Jews in the camp set up these groups philosophizing about why is God allowing this to happen? How is the chosen people being treated like this after our long history that we thought that we're moving towards emancipation? I submit to you that 1920 was better for a Jew to be in Germany than in America. America was not a great place for Jews in 1920, except maybe for the Lower East Side. I don't know, but even there was a lot of anti-Semitism in this country after World War I. Right? The war that made the world safe for democracy, where Jews are associated with Bolshevism and communism and they wanted Germany to win World War I because many were Germans, right? So, anyway, the point is that what this person told me, what Shimon Meyer told me, was that he just felt, really, God has been eviscerated from most of your discussions and everything you're doing. Right? German reform moved away from Jewish observance, away from... Their main mission was to be a light unto the nations and to light up the world and to convince man about the moral structures of Isaiah and Amos. Right? We're only reading the passages that deal with morality. Isaiah and Amos deal a lot with rituals too. It does the Torah. But anyway... So he said, he confessed to me that it just seemed strange to him that now in Dachau they're talking more about God than they ever did before. What does that even mean? Right? Now is the time that you talk about God? Where was God? Where was God before for you? Right? Like Yirmiyahu says in chapter 2, the Kohanim don't say, "Where is God?" I want you to say, "Where is God?" Look, sometimes in the Bible, "Where is God?" is a bad thing. Lama yamuna hagoyim ayeno Eloheim. You know, no, that's different. Where's their God now, huh? Right? No, that's different. Where is God means, where is God in my life? You never said that before. Now, because of Dachau, the German Jews are saying, "Where is God? Why is he letting this happen?" I think that's what's going on in the Amos. Has ki lo deber b'shem Hashem. This is not the time to start to... It's not the time to ask why. The question you need to ask is how. How are we going to survive this? Right? I remember hearing about a man who told his children while they're on the train toward resettlement. He goes, my children, I have a sense that where they're taking us, we won't be able to keep kosher. I'm telling you now, eat whatever you have to eat to stay alive. Three of them were taken straight to the crematorium and the gas chambers. But he was just trying to say, I don't know where they're taking us, but I have a sense that we may have to eat unkosher food where we're going. Right? In other words, your main objective now is not philosophizing how did we get to this situation where we're throwing out bones to a cart. Philosophically. You see the profundity of this? In other words, it's the Rav Soloveitchik spoke about this also, is that when you're paying a shiva call for someone who just lost a young child in an accident, you don't philosophize there. Don't talk about God there. Right? It's not the time. Okay? Mo, do you feel it? You hear it? No, I'm just he's just saying that you know, when they're throwing out bones, you could just say, listen, now it's how are we surviving? How can I help you? How are we getting through this? Because there will be a better day. We have faith in that. There will be a better day. Evil, the evil that's making us do this will crumble under the weight of its own pressure, of its own burdens. And we may not be there on that day, but someone will. Okay. Okay. Yeah, but Amos is just telling you, Has ki lo ledab. Kilola has kir b'shem Hashem. Really? Is there ever a time when we're not supposed to mention God? Well, yeah. Right. Time for philosophy and is... So that's like the difference between Koheles and Eov. Koheles is a man sitting in the comfort of his own vast comfort. The comfort of his comfort. And Eov, the guy is suffering while he's experiencing... while he's philosophizing. You hear me? Okay, so, whether the Malbim is right about his second has, it says he shlich has. Right? The words just before he says has there, by the way, are Rav HaPeger b'chomakom he shlich. I'm reading now Perek Chet Pasuk Gimel. There will be so many corpses that all you'll be able to do is throw them out. Sounds like our pasuk, right? And again, he says has. So I would say it's really like similar, maybe even similar to our has. Has, Without, I don't have to say Ki lo lazkir b'shem Hashem. I said that already. Has, don't say anything now. Just throw out the bone, throw out the body. Right? Same mamish, the same prophecy. Right? You may, on that, when that day comes, you may wonder how you had the strength to get past this day, but you will. That is so I make sure you can answer the question. When is it not proper to refer to God? Okay. We still have one more question to ask. What weakens Torah in the eyes of man? Is it well and proper for a prophet to speak about the weakening of Torah? That God is a good reason why the people don't obey your Torah? Who could have such chutzpah to speak that way? Right? So you remember the Gemara in Tainus about Choni HaMa'agel?
Yeah.
Right? I'm talking about where he draws a circle around and says, God, I'm gonna challenge you, I'm not gonna leave this circle until you make it rain. Right? So afterwards the Gemara says that Choni HaMa'agel was a chutzpahdik. That Shimon Bet Shetach said, Il Molei Choni Ata goes rainy, Lachon Nidua, we'll give you put you in Cherim. Right? But you're like a man who violates God's bidding, and, right? It seems that there's a statement like that about Chanina Mendoza and Brachas also, where it seems that he's chutzpahdik with God. So what chutzpah do you have to force God into this, to making it rain? Like the Philistines, remember when they bring the Aron back, where they put the cows and their young on one way, and the other way was towards Israel, and they said if the cows go after their young, then that's a sign that all this was to happen for no reason. But if they go over to Israel, then that's a sign that the God of who belongs to this ark made it all happen. Of course, the cows are going to go after their young, but they didn't. So they basically forced God into a miracle. Right? But Yisharno, they went the other way. Right? You know the story I'm talking about, right?
Yeah.
Right. So Choni HaMa'agel forced God into a miracle, and Shimon ben Shetach didn't like it. So the Gemara asks, maybe you remember, those are the big picture, but then afterwards the Gemara says, where did Choni HaMa'agel learn this kind of chutzpah to behave this way? Who gave him precedence? What Navi gives Chavakuk the precedence? And the Gemara answers, Choni HaMa'agel, a prophet whose name begins with the same letter. Right? He says, because Chavakuk, he learned from Chavakuk to have such chutzpah. So that's how we'll continue next time. Right?
A lot of them is more into Helam also.
I'm sorry?
A lot of them is more into Helam also.
Oh, absolutely. And I didn't put Helam on? Yeah, oh, goodness. Yeah, I think when we do Chavakuk, we see Perek Yud, Lama Shem Tamod Brachot. Right? 89 is about death. 89, 88. 88, because 89 is...